and welcome to Chats, a television podcast. I'm Alan, and that's Magellan.
Hello.
Hello, Magellan. This is not your regular episode of Chats, a television podcast, where we watch two episodes of a cult classic TV show every week with a focus on comedy and criticism.
No, this is a spin-off show where it's about a totally different character, maybe.
But it's also about the original characters interacting with them in different ways.
Yeah. Huh. Anyway, this is called Should You Watch?
Should You Watch?
She watches.
Should You Watch?
What are we talking about this week or this month, Alan? What should we watch or not watch?
This month on Should You Watch, we are talking about the Disney Plus original live action series, The Book of Boba Fett, which is the first episode aired December 29th of 2021, and it just concluded its season in mid-February of 2022. The Book of Boba Fett is a continuation of the story of bounty hunter Boba Fett after his encounter with the Sarlacc Pit in Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. The series stars Temuera Morrison, Ming-Na Wen, and also a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
We'll save it. And it is about them taking over for Jabba the Hutt, who was killed at the end of episode 6, and also Bib Fortuna, who was killed in between that movie and now.
We should just talk about spoilers real quick.
Yeah, we have a policy. We have a should you watch policy.
You can check the show notes for what is going to get spoiled at what point. The Star Wars movies are going to get spoiled, just so you know.
Yeah,
so
1 through 6 at least. Yeah.
Yep. And then we will talk about the show holistically without any spoilers for the show. We'll talk about the pilot and spoil that. Then we'll spoil the first 4 episodes and we'll spoil all 7 of this season of The Book of Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. Check the show notes for the timestamps.
I should also mention that the series, like most of the live-action Star Wars stuff lately, was led by Jon Favreau and has multiple directing credits with Dave Filoni and Robert Rodriguez taking the helm of many of the episodes.
Yes, and there are things that happen in Book of Boba Fett that spoil The Mandalorian. So whenever this, I have not seen The Mandalorian, Alan has. We are going to limit our discussion of The Mandalorian to what is spoiled within the Book of Boba Fett, but yes, it does spoil parts of The Mandalorian.
And this gets into
be clear in the show notes as well.
This gets into the overall picture of the Book of Boba Fett, which was pitched as the Boba Fett story continuing what happened, like I said, after the Sarlacc Pit in episode 6. And if you ever cared and you've read the comics or any of the books that have come out when there was an expanded universe, you know that Boba Fett survived that attack through various means. And there have been different depictions of what he did when he survived, whether he became a crime boss, whether he continued being a bounty hunter. It's been interesting territory because I think Boba Fett fundamentally is a character that writers really like to work with, because he's cool, he doesn't have a lot to say in the original movie, so it's like it's really easy to fill in the blanks with him, like so many Star Wars background characters. But he's just particularly captured the mind of a lot of nerdy kids in the 80s and 90s, and you know, it seemed ripe. It seemed really ripe for a story within that corner of the universe. Like, what does Boba do when he gets out of the thing? But like you were saying, this series is interwoven in the Star Wars expanded universe, which is where we're at with the Star Wars franchise right now. We had episode 9 in 2019, and now they make Star Wars shows. And it's all one big media Disney empire. Ha-ha! It's my favorite character, Mickey Mouse! That's not copyright infringing. Don't beat me up, Disney. I'm sorry. I want to ask you, first of all, so you checked this show out because we were talking about it and because you're a Star Wars nerd, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I am not that interested in Boba Fett. I'll be totally honest.
Same.
To me, he strikes me as the epitome of like what I'm not that into about Star Wars, which is, whoa, that guy has a cool suit and flamethrowers and a jetpack. Everything's about him. And like, let's just make a bunch of stuff up. I don't, I'm like, that's not what's cool to me. what's cool to me is people having like deep moral conundrums and like overly complicated socio-political dilemmas. That's I'm into the prequels. That's cool. So yeah, I don't really find Boba Fett that interesting. I do find the criminal underworld of Star Wars interesting and compelling. I will say that. And so Boba Fett's world I'm intrigued by, but not him as a character. And I sort of missed, we piloted The Mandalorian, so I'm sure I talked about this in the pilot chats of that, which you can check out on our Patreon, the little plug for the Patreon, maybe about a year ago or more, or I don't remember.
Pilot chats, The Mandalorian is the episode folks are looking
for. Yeah, you can check it out on our Patreon. But I sort of missed the boat on when The Mandalorian first started, and my thing, my character flaw, is that when I miss the boat, I then stubbornly don't watch things that I miss the boat on.
He decides to walk instead, except he's on the ocean, so it's really hard.
Yeah, exactly. So I haven't seen The Mandalorian, and at this point I'm like, meh. But yeah, I watch this because it's like a Star Wars show that I know the character, and so I maybe have an entry point, and I want to see what Star Wars TV looks like.
How did you feel about this as an entry point into the Star Wars TV universe?
It's not.
It's, oops.
It is not one. If you are... okay. I don't want to spoil anything, but this is sort of a Boba Fett spinoff, and it's sort of The Mandalorian Season 2.5. And...
So you had a theory about this.
Here's my thinking. I can't remember where I read this, but a little while ago I read that. So if you're a streaming platform, right, the thing you care about when you are choosing what shows to put on there, what shows to produce, the thing you care about is subscriber dollars. Is this show retaining subscribers? Is it converting people into subscribers? Is it bringing people back who lapsed in their subscriptions? Mm-hmm. And Netflix, I think, in their early experimentations with Netflix originals, determined that there's, and again, I think I'm going to try to look this up and link it in the show notes so that I can source this claim. But I remember reading that there's diminishing returns after two seasons of an original show, where after that point, it's not doing the sort of conversion to get people to subscribe that would justify the company deciding to continue it, even if it's a really popular show or a well-loved or a well-reviewed show. It might not be bringing on new people or bringing back people. And so my theory is that in order to juice The Mandalorian, they put out a show called The Book of Boba Fett, and people are like, cool, Boba Fett, I know that guy. Entry point into Star Wars TV. And then the Book of Boba Fett is like, yeah, you got to watch The Mandalorian. We gotcha. And people are like, oh, okay, all right, I'll go watch The Mandalorian. And so it's a way to get people to watch and talk about The Mandalorian by pretending like you're giving them something else, but you're really just giving them The Mandalorian. And that made me mad. I was not a fan.
You got Disney. You got Disneyed. And like,
I got Disneyed, yeah.
It's a thing. I also am up to date on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and this is just the formula that they have for TV on there. Is like,
yep,
everything feels independent and can be marketed as self-contained, but is not really. Whether it's Hawkeye, whether it's the Netflix shows, whether it's the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, or even WandaVision, all of them are self-contained. Loki especially are contained, but not really contained, just so you feel a little bit of FOMO. And something to be aware of if you're like, I'm a lapsed Star Wars fan, I thought Boba Fett was cool in episode 6, should I watch the show? Is like, you're going to be a little bit lost after a while. Like, you'll be able to watch probably, you know, about half the season, maybe more. And then you're going to be like, oh, that's my looking out upon the entire series without getting into it. My warning, my cautionary tale.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. It's such a, what a great problem to have. Like, our beloved franchises are now producing media that's too interconnected and rich in story for us to keep up with. Like if you had presented that problem to me as a high schooler who adored Star Wars and was starved for Star Wars content, I would have been like, what is wrong with you? Just watch all this great Star Wars TV.
Yeah. Don't you want to watch all of it?
Right. But there's just like, I don't know. There's this sense of fatigue with, like you said, the machine of how this is produced and the like naked capitalist incentives at play that make it hard to blissfully enjoy this new era of Star Wars TV or whatever. And, you know, I'm going to watch Obi-Wan and I hope it's good. I hope I don't have to watch anything else in order to understand it.
It's probably going to tie into something.
Let's probably going to tie into like the Clone Wars or something. Who knows?
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's this media empire that, you know, it attempts to include everything and say, well, isn't it exciting that we're smashing all the action figures together? And it's like, well, I think that Star Wars worked because it's like poetry, it rhymes. The infamous George Lucas quote when he's talking about the prequels.
Right.
And it works because it's like, oh, this is invoking something from the past. But Star Wars at its worst, like in the sequel trilogies, for example, was overly referential and like absolutely obsessed with just recreating and referencing the past. And that's what the Book of Boba Fett falls into, is being like, yeah, but you know who else is here? You know who else is here? But you know who else is here? And it's like, guys, like, I just want to watch a show that is about something. And I think the truth of the matter is we might be a little bit old for this, which is depressing to think about. But like, I think, like you said, if I was in high school, this would be the dopest thing in the world.
We're sort of too old for this, but also this show asks a level of like attention to everything that's come out and like attention to the discourse around things that have come out, that it makes me think like this isn't a show for kids necessarily. Like it is in the sense that it's like pew pew Star Wars, wow, that's so cool. But it's a show for the people who are fans of The Mandalorian, I think. I don't know. Like we're too old for the prequels for sure. Those are kids' movies. But also the other thing you can say about the prequels is you can be a kid who has not seen the original series, the original trilogy, and know what's going on, because you don't actually have to know anything from the original trilogy to understand the events of the prequel trilogy, which is not the case for this show.
And we were kids, when the prequel trilogy came out, is what you're saying. But like,
yeah,
and it's not even just The Mandalorian. Like it's broad. You're looking into a void when you start watching the Book of Boba Fett. And it's like, I think to my last big point without starting to get into the actual like content of the show is at the very least, what I wanted to come here to see is Boba Fett being cool, because Boba Fett was always cool. It's just that he didn't have anything to do. And then he got swallowed up by a pit and was in there for like years. And like he was just done. So it's like, okay, I want to see him like use the jetpack and use the flamethrower and like say cool one-liners and like be a badass. And they choose to characterize Boba in some interesting ways here. I think part of it is just that Temuera Morrison is an incredibly talented actor who brings a like,
he's great,
a like not warmth, but a like a sort of a kindness to Boba Fett in this that I really enjoy.
Yeah, like a wisdom. He brings wisdom to it.
Yeah, he's not just here to be a cold killer. I think this has become a common thing in the like expanded universe, fleshing out of the bounty hunters is like, oh, actually, they were really nice or they were really cool or whatever. And so their choice is, instead of being like, isn't he a freaking badass? It's like, yeah, well, also like being running a criminal empire is like very hard, and you're older now and you need to be in the Bacta tank for longer, and like your body is deteriorating. So this is like an older Boba Fett. And that's something I genuinely like a lot about his characterization here, is that they didn't just make him gritty and like grumpy and sad. He's like a guy who cares about people and who like listens to the people who are down on their luck and tries to help them out.
Yeah. I think we're starting to move into things that are explored in the pilot. So maybe we can just say at this point that we're going to spoil the pilot of the show. Does that sound good?
At this point, if you're listening, you've watched the pilot of the Book of Boba Fett, or you don't care about spoilers.
Or you don't care if we spoil it, I totally agree with you. I think there are really great ideas about how to characterize Boba Fett, because to be perfectly honest, Boba Fett is not characterized in the original trilogy. He stands around and we don't know what his deal is. And everybody was like, that guy. I want him as my action figure. And yeah, this in the pilot, the setup is so how much of this is set up in The Mandalorian? I know you told me this, but I couldn't fully remember. He just like kind of pops up and it's like, oh, my God, it's Boba Fett.
It's a plot line that involves Cobb Vanth, the guy played by Timothy Oliphant, who's like a mercenary in Mandalorian season two. And it's just like Mando is like going around doing stuff and he sees, he's like, hey, wait, I know that armor. And then he like does some investigating, finds who the armor belongs to and goes, oh, my God, Boba Fett. And then they hang out and they do stuff.
Great. So we know Boba Fett's around. We know he's alive. And in this episode, we start to explore two things. How did he get to the place that he's at, where he's trying to run what was once Jabba the Hutt's criminal empire, what was once Bib Fortuna's empire, what is now his, presumably, although he has to sort of prove his leadership and his ability to hold authority. So we're exploring how did he get there and what is he doing in that role? And how does the way that he's trying to do those things differentiate him from Jabba the Hutt, Bib Fortuna, other characters who have tried to do or are currently trying to do similar things? And I agree with you. Temuera Morrison does a fantastic job. And I think I was like not that interested in this story at first, and then I became super invested in it by the time we got about halfway through the season.
Yes, and so the other thing that I guess, because like, I'm okay talking about Mando season two stuff here now, right?
I would say don't spoil anything that is not said or depicted in this show.
Okay, well, yeah, no, in this show. I just mean that what we knew going into this, if you have watched Mando season two, is Boba Fett's alive and he has a partner and he's taking over for Jabba.
Yeah.
So the final shot in the post credits of that is him being like, it's my, like he sits on the chair and then it says the Book of Boba Fett coming in 2021. So that's like where we came into this from. So like started doing the pilot and being like, here's how he survived. He like sucked oxygen out of another soldier's like helmet for like presumably years to survive in the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, he said he was in there for years.
That's wild. That's pretty hardcore. I wish they actually like underlined that more because it's kind of briefly touched on.
Yeah.
And
he was survived. In there long enough for the Empire to fall.
He's in and there he for breaks a while. Out and then tries to find all of his stuff. And his story early on in this in this pilot especially is like, hey, it's kind of you know, speaking of Boba as a more empathetic character, what if Boba Fett was, what did you say, the last samurai?
Yeah. Yeah, that's essentially what happened.
What if we were less racist about the Tusken Raiders, but also no, like...
Just in a different way, a different kind of racism. Yeah.
Exactly. Because he meets up with some Tusken Raiders and they have some adventures. So like, I guess we're doing Tusken Raiders now, but we're not going to call them sand people. He's earning their respect.
Yeah.
He earning water from them. Like that's what the show is here so far.
Yeah. Yeah. He's initially forced by them to dig for water. And then over the course of the first couple episodes, he develops a bond with them. We in the present, Boba Fett is dealing with the various players in the Mos Espa scene. People come to pay him tribute, except there's this one guy who doesn't pay tribute, who's there on behalf of the mayor. And I about lost it when I recognized him as Dave Pasquese of TJ and Dave, a luminary of the improv world. It was like the same feeling as, I don't even remember who the comedian was. It was like Horatio Sands or something in the Mandalorian pilot as like
a random alien.
Horatio Sands. So funny. Dave Pasquese is great. He's a little too like Dave normal Pasquese. Of a person and yeah, like jokey, but it's very enjoyable to see him be this sycophantic Twi'lek guy. It's really entertaining.
There's more than a few. It's just a thing in the Jon Favreau corner of the live action Star Wars show universe is like, here's some obscure ass comedians. They're like, Brian Posehn is an alien. Like, what? Are Dave Pascasian an alien? Like, just the pulls that you're like, if you were a comedy nerd in the 2010s and you cared about improv and or you listened to Comedy Bang Bang, you're going to constantly find yourself going, that guy, whoa, or right. that lady in some cases. It's really weird and definitely pulls me out of it. Although I think the makeup on Pascasian's character here, because he's a Twi'lek, is like pretty cool. He's got orange skin and it's great.
Yeah. I really liked this show's embracing of makeup and practical effects, you know, to the most extent that they could. Like, there are some rubber ass Gamorreans who are just dudes in suits and some animatronic aliens. And I was into it.
They need to do more of it. It's every time they do it, it's awesome. He's got his cool robot buddy. Apparently that, but he has the robot buddy in this episode, right? Because it's in the present. Yeah. He has like his robot assistant. Yeah. So that's first of all voiced by Matt Berry of What We Do in the Shadows fame, famous British comedian. And also 8D8 was in Return of the Jedi in a background shot in Jabba's palace. So they voiced and invented a character around a background shot character, which is really,
I love that. That's great.
Yeah, that's the stuff. That's the stuff I'm here for.
Yeah.
I would say with the pilot though, I was a little bit confused that I realized the show was doing like two narratives. It forms the narrative like pace of the season, which is that we have the past where Boba Fett is, we're seeing how Boba Fett got out of the Sarlacc pit, met up with the Tusken Raiders, does work with them, and then gets to becoming the crime lord that he is in the present, where he's dealing with present issues. And so like the first chunk of the season is just like, here's that, and that's what we're seeing in this episode. And I was genuine, there was honestly points where I was like, I don't understand what where the split is, but when I rewatched this pilot, I realized every time it's the back to tank.
The back to tank, yeah.
Is how they separate it, which I think is smart.
Yeah.
Also, like, what's up with flashing back to the prequels? It makes me so happy when they actually acknowledge the prequels things.
Oh, my God. Like, him seeing his dad get killed, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
He would have dreams about that. That would affect him as a character. Yes, the prequels do exist.
Finally.
I love it.
My investment is valid.
Yeah.
And it felt like the show is worth its time when it's like, here's what Boba Fett's like when he grows up. Here's what his character's interiority is.
Yeah.
And here's what those Gamorrean guards are doing.
Are those like the same guys from back in the day? Probably.
I'm not sure, but I remember there being a pair of them, and I like to think these are the same guys.
I hope it's the one that Luke force choked.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'm still doing my job.
It was a rough time. Guy. I had to go to therapy for a while after I got nearly choked to death, but it's okay. Well, I'm around.
Should we expand to talk about the first four episodes and these plot lines in more detail?
Let's do it.
So I want to keep talking about the characterization of Boba Fett because initially I was like, my reaction to this was, ah, man, this is so ridiculous. If somebody's here for a Boba Fett show, they want to see Boba Fett being a bounty hunter. That's his whole thing. That's what people want to watch. Why are you doing this thing where he's like a crime lord and he's assembling this motley crew, this little family of people or whatever? It doesn't gel. It's not his character. And over the course of the first four episodes, what I liked is they were able to explore and explain how the various things that have happened to Boba Fett mean that he can't possibly be the old version of himself anymore. Like, this guy had to survive in a pit for years. He's going to come out a different guy.
His muscles are atrophied. He's older. Like,
yeah, he's not going to want to be a bounty hunter anymore. And so I like that his whole philosophy is the people who run this criminal underworld are idiots who do things inefficiently, put people at risk, and I'm going to run things better. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. And I think that also ties into him remembering his dad flying away. Oh, dad, come back. Yeah. His dad getting killed because of his work with the separatists, and just all of these sort of tragic things in his life tying back to being at the whim of other people. So it makes total sense that he's going to want to be this crime boss guy. And then the other thing that was, you know, interesting, I think they get really cheesy with him, quote unquote, going native with the Tuskens and like that's basically what the trope is, right?
Yeah.
And he gets like a pathfinding lizard stuck in his nostrils, and he learns how to craft his Tusken stick or whatever. It just is like very rote. But what's interesting about it is it instills in him this faith in the idea of like community and having a team or a tribe, as he says. And what I was thinking about was interesting about that is like, on the one hand, Boba Fett is like his father in the sense that he is ruggedly individualistic and hard-headed and ambitious and all of these things. But Boba Fett's also a clone. And it makes me wonder if there's some part of him that shares the propensity that the clones have to want to be part of
a whole
part of a battalion in camaraderie with each other. So I found that really interesting. And I was hoping they would maybe stamp that or like talk about that more directly. Like Boba Fett isn't just a guy, he's a clone. And there's something in that that's interesting to explore that they didn't really touch, but I think resonates with the whole like, we're a family, let me bring together all my people kind of thing.
Yes, I definitely think that's the case. And I know though too that like having watched, I've watched three seasons of The Clone Wars. They do talk about how like the clones were implanted with more of that like camaraderie nature, and Boba Fett was not, because he's like the untouched clone who gets as close to Jango's DNA as possible. But like, yeah, he still has that. There has to be something fundamental on him that wants to be part of a group.
Yeah, no, and I know that is said in the prequels. I'm just wondering if there's even something where like they thought that they programmed him to be individualistic, but maybe there's like some unavoidable aspect of being cloned, like that you can't program away almost.
But, anyway. Yeah, the other thing we're talking about the first four here, correct?
Yeah, so you can talk about anything you want in the first four.
Fennec Shand is reintroduced. Fennec Shand, played by Ming-Na Wen, who's a great presence here. I think she's played a little bit, not flat. She has like some of the better action scenes, and this bumps me into my problem with Boba Fett at this point, four episodes in, which is like, Boba Fett is the least action-y character in the Boba Fett series. He does the least amount of fighting, the least amount of shooting, and like he does the most talking, I guess. But like Fennec has the like high flying rooftop chase scene where like the assassins try to kill him and then she like chases them, and she's got the cool helmet, so it makes it really easy to have a stunt double through her scenes. But like, they introduce all these other cool people. They have this Wookiee bounty hunter, Chrysantin, who's trying to like attack him, and that guy's great, and that guy's from the comics, I guess. They have like different huts. They start really fleshing out like what Mos Espa has. Like, what's the deal?
They have the cast of Yellow Jackets show up to be a biker gang.
Yeah, that was controversial when fans were watching this for the first time, because
I believe it.
Boba Fett is like hired by Steven Root, who plays like a random dude, to be like, hey, like these kids didn't pay for my water. I want to like have I'm Nestle. I have a monopoly on water. And he looks into it, and it's a bunch of teens. The main one being played by the same person who played young Natalie in Yellow Jackets, our last Trinity Watch episode. And they're a bunch of teen bikers who Majan, when we were watching this one together, was like, what's he going to ask them to work for him? And they're like, we don't have work. We can't find work. And then he goes, what if you worked for me? And I was so into it. I was like, because I was bored of the past stuff. I thought that all of this, like Stranger in a Strange Land, Boba Fett learning from the Tusken Raiders stuff, like,
yeah, I was not that bored of it really quickly. Yeah.
It just wears out its welcome really quickly. And this stuff was like brought some much needed energy into the present. But I think the most evident thing of like the perfect example of what I'm talking about where Boba Fett feels underpowered is, there's this great chase scene where the bikers like go and chase Dave Pasquese's character because he runs away and tries to hide secrets for the mayor, Mok Shays, who's voiced by Robert Rodriguez, by the way. And they catch him, and then Boba like lands on his car in his jetpack, and it's like, why did we do a chase scene? Boba Fett is the guy. He has a jetpack. That's his thing. Let him use the jetpack.
Yeah.
But they wanted to show off these cool bikes, and I think that's partly where the fans were like, why are there teens? Like, we don't see a lot of teens in Star Wars. We either see adults or children.
Right.
There's like no middle ground. So it's really interesting being like, these are the youth. This is like what poor people in on Tatooine are like.
Yeah.
And they just happen to have really stylish motorcycles, which I guess is like a nod to George Lucas's like motorcycle obsession from the 70s.
Yeah, they looked a lot like real motorcycles. Also, these kids are like from a cyberpunk story. Like they do body modification type stuff. And it's like tonally they're clashing with everything else that's going on. They're not really part of this like sort of Godfather mafia story that Boba Fett's playing out. But I was also kind of into it because seeing Boba Fett babysit a bunch of teens was entertaining to me.
And we also get flashbacks, speaking of the body modification, to him meeting Fennec Shand, which we didn't see in Mando. That's like not they just know each other. You're like, okay, these people are cool. But he like takes her to get healed up, and then they're like, we have to get rid of her. I think her arm, and they replace part of her, a bunch of different parts of her, with cybernetics. And it's like it's like 2 seconds of, oh my god, am I still human if I have cybernetic parts? And then the show's like, no, we don't got time for that. Let's move on. And so the show feels like it's building to something about like community and like how we're gonna save this part of Tatooine. And like he's got these Gamorrean guards and he's got Fennec, and like it's great. This is the Boba Fett show. We finally come into our own. And who we have a villain now. We have the Pike Syndicate. I think the first few episodes also suffer from not having a clear villain. It's implied that Mokshay's the mayor here, is like this Celestan dude who just is hiding out in the background and clearly working against Boba Fett. But
he's not a Celestan. Sorry, he's a Ithorian.
Ithorian. I remember. No, it's all good. So this is a case where you can correct me. And he's like recruited Krasantan, and you're like, okay, he's got allies. And then episode 4 ends, and he's like, we need another ally or something. We need more allies if we're going to fight the Pike Syndicate. Yeah. He's got a Rancor. I loved seeing gosh dang Danny Trejo. That was so exciting.
So good. What a great cameo. Danny Trejo's the fucking Rancor Tamer. So funny.
It's hysterical. Oh, and it's entirely based on the one-second shot in episode 6 where the Rancor dies and the guy who the owner is like, oh, like he cries. It's like the most sad, like it's a true sad moment in Star Wars. Yeah. And so they made Danny Trejo be the Rancor Tamer, and it's like they really lean into Boba being like, I'm going to ride it. I love this boy. This is my son. I love the Rancor.
Yeah, the parts of Book of Boba Fett where it's like, hey, this is a sequel to Attack of the Clones and Return of the Jedi. And that's it. That's delicious. What we're doing. We're doing all the episode 2 stuff, all the episode 6 stuff, and that's the show. I love it. When they do the Bossa Nova remix of the Cantina song, when there's the twin Hutts who hang out and talk just like Jabba did, it's great. All that stuff was very entertaining to me. There's an evil Wookiee. I mean, come on. Very fun.
Yes, an evil Wookiee with lightning... brass knuckles, basically electrified brass knuckles. That's awesome. Robert Rodriguez knows how to direct action scenes. When there are action scenes in this, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, the direction is great on this show.
Mm-hmm.
They break into Jabba's palace when Bib Fortuna's in charge, and they fight the sous chef droid. Very good.
Yeah. Very good.
That shot where he's got his ship back and he steers it to look into the Sarlacc pit to look for his armor. Super cool.
Awesome
moment. A lot of great, cool stuff riffing on just that material from the first couple movies. One of my favorite lines, by the way, before we talk about the next phase of the season, is when Boba Fett is like recruiting those teens who are stealing the water, and he's mad at the guy who's hoarding it. He has this throwaway line where he says, "I grew up surrounded by water," and it made me think about like, yeah, Boba Fett grew up on Kamino, and now he's on Tatooine. Wow.
His environment's completely flipped. That's like one of the most clever lines,
It's so interesting.
That's the kind of line we refer to on chats a lot as like a high five in the writer's room. It's like, oh my god, water, and then say, like, whoa.
So I loved episode 4 when we see how he meets Fennec, and they get his position all figured out. We've finished up the flashback stuff. we're poised to figure out, okay, how is shit going to hit the fan in Mos Espa? And then
she suggests that they hire reinforcements for the incoming war. And at this point, I would say, should you watch? Definitely. This is the show you've been wanting. It's building up to something. But what is that something? And then January 26, 2022, all of our lives were changed as Bryce Dallas Howard returns to direct, because she directed episodes of season two of Mando. And she and the crew working on...
Sorry, we're about to spoil the rest of the season.
Okay. Yes, yeah, sorry. Yes, thank you.
Just to be
rest,
clear.
The rest of the season is Mandalorian episodes with a Boba Fett name plate scratched off. These are Mandalorian ass episodes in tone, in character, in everything,
content.
In content. These are Mando episodes. If you didn't watch Mando seasons one and two, you can just leave. There are literally entire episodes. I think Boba says like maybe one line in episode six, like maybe one line.
I don't think he's in episode five. Was he
in
it?
Yeah, he's not. No, episode five is the most like, and I think it's cool, like right before the midnight hour, to be like when I first watched this, it's like, oh, that's interesting. Like Mando. I didn't think this would be the season though. But to do one episode of like, and now something completely different right before the finale. That's a good idea. That's an interesting thing. But yeah. To tie it into the like weird lore, because I was disappointed by Mando season two. I think it just leans a bit too hard on, hey, guess what? References to the past over and over again and bringing back characters you've seen before. And now we're doubling down and referencing Mando, and the episode is called Return of the Mandalorian.
Ugh.
So you having not watched Mando season two, were you just like, what the fuck is this? Like, why
it was
this?
Fucking inscrutable. It yeah. Like episode five hits and I do not know what's going on. And Mandalorian, from my perception, is a boring character. I mean, maybe he's more interesting in his own show where I know more about him. But he's just this guy who walks around. He's like, the code, the Mandalorian code. That's the way you got to do it. And all of these other Mandalorians are yelling at him. And the one lady, it seems like it's this really plot important moment where there's a fucking dark lightsaber or something. And he's like going through some trial to see if he's going to be in charge of the Mandalorians. And then he like loses, or he almost wins, but he took his helmet off at one point. So he's in trouble. And it's like, why is this here? This feels like it's resolving or addressing something from the Mandalorian that belongs in that show.
Yeah.
And it's like being jammed into this other thing. I appreciate what you said about like, okay, we're about to go into the final thing. Pause. Let's bring in the rest of the characters who are going to be there. Like Mandalorian's going to be there. We're going to bring in the people from Timothy Oliphant's town. We're going to bring back Baby Yoda. We're doing all this stuff. So we got to get all our pieces into position. And I think that works in a show that's like, this wants to be like the Game of Thrones of Star Wars, basically.
Yeah.
Where you have this huge ensemble cast and you can do this to your audience where you say like, okay, we're about to do the big fight, but oh, we're actually for a couple episodes going to go over here. And a show like Game of Thrones can do that because it's on the tin that that's what Game of Thrones is.
It's about the world, not about one character or one group of characters.
Right. And it's about all of these characters sort of rotating around this common thing, which is the Game of Thrones. Like we're going to engage in conflict over who gets to rule this country. And they're trying to make that happen out of two shows that are much more like, I don't know, Breaking Bad or whatever. I can't even think of prestige shows with a single protagonist, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's what The Mandalorian is on the face. That's what the Book of Boba Fett is on the face. And I'm all here for a show that's like, hey, it's like Game of Thrones, but it's Star Wars. And we're going to tell this huge sweeping ensemble thing. But to cram it into this show where you brought people in by saying it's Boba Fett. Ah, yeah, it's Boba Fett. And then to do this, I was very frustrated by it. Like
it feels
deeply frustrated. Yeah. It feels like a fucking Trojan horse operation or something.
Because when I paused the episode and I'm like, I literally multiple times was pausing part five being like, am I still watching the Book of Boba Fett? Like, did I like put the wrong thing? I had to put the wrong thing on. I'm watching Mando right now. And it's been a year since I watched Mando season two. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm forgetting something. Like, who are these characters? And no, this is billed as the Book of Boba Fett episode five, Return of the Mandalorian. And it just is a Mando episode for all of what that means, like obsession with like armor and honor and the Mandalorian culture. And like, I think that stuff's a little bit cool, but also the heavy handed references to more past stuff like the Darksaber, which they introduced in season one of Mando. And they reintroduced it into the live action world. It was just for some background folks, because I have invested in this stuff. Introduced in the Clone Wars as like a Mandalorian artifact, brought back in a major way in Star Wars Rebels, in a big way with an arc with a character on Rebels, and then kind of like put away and forgotten about. Like, okay, we took care of the Darksaber. It's so powerful, and as they describe it here, if you swing it without working with it, then it's very heavy. And he fights Paz Vizsla, who's Jon Favreau, who's voiced by Jon Favreau. And like all this stuff, and then it's like him getting the Razor Crest back, and you're supposed to care about the Razor Crest, and I'm like, I watched Mando, and I don't care about his ship. It's kind of cool, whatever. I liked Baby Yoda, and then he's like, well, I gotta go make armor for Baby Yoda, and I have to bring it to him, and where is he? And like, I'm gonna go back to the thing, and it's like, dude, you stop. And what I think works about Mandalorian in his own show is Pedro Pascal manages to make that character, and pardon my French here, really gosh damn sexy without a face. He's like so hot without ever seeing his face, and he just doesn't have that here. So this is a boring episode of Mandalorian is the problem for me. It's like I'm the intended audience that's like, I've seen all of it. I've seen a lot of most of Clone Wars, and I've seen a lot of Rebels, and I'm still like, yeah, this is an okay episode of Mando, but what am I watching right now?
And it's like, what? It totally fucks with what is the like unifying concept or thing of the Book of Boba Fett. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Get all your friends together and hang out with them, because friendship wins the day. Mm-hmm. Like, suddenly it makes what was going on with Boba Fett's story much more anodyne. And it doesn't interrogate, like, Boba Fett is a guy who wears armor that is like Mandalorian in appearance, and when people saw the Mandalorian, it's like, whoa, is that Jango Fett? Boba Fett, what's going on there?
Whoa.
And this show doesn't like engage with that or interrogate that at all. There's a brief exchange where Boba Fett's like, man, you believe it? That's that old honor code stuff. Come on. Make that the reason that the Mandalorian's in the show. If you're gonna do that, I'm interested in that. What does Boba Fett think about Mandalorian stuff? Because he's essentially appropriating Mandalorian culture by like walking around with the armor on. And like, let's talk about that. But now there's like a crest and the Darksaber, and now you're banished, and it's silly.
There's like literally one conversation, I think, in episode 7 where they talk to each other. It's like before the battle, and they talk about like, are you willing to die like for your thing? And it's like, well, I'd rather die honorably. It's like, okay, that's it. That's the connecting thing. But like, do more of that. Like, all it does is it builds them up to fight with each other, and it gives Mando something to do where he can bump into 17,000 different cameos from the Star Wars universe, which becomes embarrassing by episode 6, where I'm like, I'm embarrassed that I understand these references. That was my take. Because episode 6, From the Desert Comes a Stranger, he runs into, let me just go down the list here, Cobb Vanth, who's from Mando season 2, played wonderfully by the very handsome Timothy Oliphant. He's a cowboy. What if a cowboy was in Star Wars?
Yeah, he's basically just Justified. What if Justified was
exactly in Star Wars? They're gonna make more Justified soon, so like, why? Why?
He had to get killed off in this so he could play the character in its original show.
Yeah, Raylan Givens, my man. He goes to a forest world to be with Yoda, but it's Grogu, and guess who's there? It's R2-D2. Fuck you, that. Dude. Stop.
I was already so upset. And then
Ahsoka Tano, who, continuing going down my list, I'm not going to spoil her situation in the Clone Wars because I haven't seen all of it, but I know what happens to her. She obviously lives through it because this takes place after the Clone Wars. But like, the basic arc of the Jedi and clones plot in the Clone Wars series, without getting into details, is, hey, the Jedi and the clone project in this entire war might actually be really bad for us, and the only way we can escape is by getting the fuck out.
From my perspective, the Jedi are evil.
Exactly. It's that sentence brought out into seven seasons of TV, but in less corny.
Yeah.
And so Ahsoka Tano, who's like the fundamental center of that as Anakin's apprentice, to then come out and be like, well, but we're going to make a school. We're going to make a new Jedi school. And Grogu can be with us. He's like, what are you doing? What do you think Star Wars is about? It's like, if you're going to reference it, at least reference it accurately. Like, I just fundamentally disagree with their interpretation of Ahsoka, because she's such a good character in Clone Wars. And so important to like the show critiquing the Jedi, that to bring her back and be like, and Luke's here and Grogu's here and blah, blah, blah. It's like, guys, you can't just. I recently rewatched Rise of Skywalker, and I had the exact same reaction in that movie where there's a moment where you hear her voice without getting into detail. And again, I was like, you can't just bring out Ahsoka because she's cool to put on toys and posters. She is against this. She doesn't like this. Like, what, you guys don't get it. And that's frustrating. And then like Luke's back, which again, Luke was in Mando season 2, and like
he was
you
told me that.
And like Mando, because he's the one who takes Grogu, that, you know, Mark Hamill's older now, so they don't actually use him. They use another actor who has the build of young Mark Hamill, and they CG over his face a version of like a slight of a young Mark Hamill. It looks bad, dude. I understand CG is hard.
It's not even his voice. Like, who's voicing him?
I think it's an AI attempting to sound like young.
Okay.
That's why it sounds robotic.
I heard some bits there that,
Then they don't make him talk a lot, and him running through the woods and stuff, like helping out, you're like, okay, this doesn't look that bad. In Mando season 2, it looked garbage. It was like so bad. I recommend you
cast somebody as Luke and say, this is Luke Skywalker.
This is our new Luke. And like, have Mark work with you guys. He's still alive. Like, just recruit him. Yeah. He wants to. He's done Star Wars stuff.
If I get to be Mark Hamill's age and I still have to see them puppeting Mark Hamill's visage around their fucking movies and TV shows, I'm going to cry. Like,
yeah. But it's Disney. So like, they're going to hand him a check. They're handing him a bajillion dollar check. Like, we're going to use your likeness. Thanks.
It sucks. Yeah, I'm sure they are. It's still grim. And, just hire somebody else to play Luke. It's okay.
At this point, the season becomes so allergic to doing anything new that it doubles down. And the one that was the most egregious to me was, continuing my checklist here, Cad Bane is brought into the present day plot line. And Cad Bane, if you watch The Clone Wars, is objectively the best character in that show. He's so much fun. He's a badass bounty hunter. He's like everything Boba Fett was in theory, but not in practice. But he's also smooth talking. He is smarter than the Jedi. He knows that they suck. He can betray them and trick them constantly, and it keeps working. He doesn't fail. He just chooses to leave most of the time. That's what makes Cad Bane great. And seeing Cad Bane in live action is like pretty sick. Like, they actually, like, that looked pretty good. I thought those, whatever CG or prosthetics working there was dope. And he gets a cool moment where, you know, he wins a three-way gunfight because he's Cad Bane and he doesn't lose. But, like, why? Why, though? Like, why textually did you do this other than the blog writers are going to really love when we put Cad Bane in here?
Right. He's this, like, 11th hour bad guy just to be a face of the bad guys. And it's also just this strange thing to me where all of this stuff gets shoved into Boba Fett and gets resolved in here for, I don't really understand why. Like, this character, Cad Bane, who was in the Clone Wars and has been this character for so long, dies here in Book of Boba Fett. Okay, cool. The Timothy Oliphant guy dies here too. All right, great. Sorry, guys, that you had to die in like a random side plot of this show that I don't even know what it is. It's just, it's strange.
Cobb survives in the credits of episode 7.
Oh, okay.
It's like they are cybernetically enhancing him in the back of the tank.
Oh, okay.
So Cobb Vanth is still alive, which they're supposed to do season 3 of The Mandalorian this year. It's like, I think it's the next Star Wars thing. It might be before, Obi-Wan, probably after at this point. I don't know the timeline. But yeah, Cad Bane is back and then gone. And Cobb Vanth is back and then taken care of. And it's like, what is this anymore? We're just going to like, it's smushing the action figures together. It's selling me on like, hey, remember that guy? Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, and it's corny and it's bad. And if you watched this for the first half of it, and then now you're like, why am I watching this? I'm watching it to finish it at this point.
Yeah.
And they have this whole plot about Grogu having this choice of like, do you take the chainmail and stop your training, or do you take Yoda's lightsaber and we're going to train you as a Jedi? And you know that he's going to take the armor because he needs to be in Mando season 3 so he can keep selling toys.
Right.
Like, you know, we can't, this is not a fake choice. This is the illusion of choice. Right. Also, not enough people have talked about her, but I think what makes the Mando episodes, the Mando Boba episodes, good also is Amy Sedaris' character from Mandalorian is brought back. She's the mechanic that works on the Razor Crest.
Yeah.
And like, Amy Sedaris is so funny. I love her. I think she's one of the most talented comedians right now. What are you going to say? You weren't a fan.
I love Amy Sedaris to death.
Yes.
I did not like this. I think it was not well written. I don't know.
It feels really out of touch with the rest of the show, but that's what I like about it. It's just like, what is this? Why? She's like a weird, like nerdy mechanic, overexcited, yells at her droids, all that stuff.
I think maybe if I knew her already, I think she just is part of everything that I knew I didn't know. And so I was like, this, whoa, I'm sick of this.
That's so big.
But I'll have to see more of her from her own show.
She's only in a little bit of Mando. She's not in like all of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, also she just has an iconic voice. Like I could listen to Amy Sedaris read the phone book.
Amy Sedaris is awesome.
I've listened to her brother David read the phone book, but I would like to listen to her read the phone book. again, speaking of like cool comedian, like deep cuts, Amy Sedaris. But yeah, and then the show ends. He successfully uses the Rancor and fights people and then kills Bane with his cool, his gaffy stick from the earlier in the season, remember? And then Fennec kills the Pike boss and Mike Shmugshies and everybody. And now we have Mos Espa and Din Djarin and Grogu fly away and Cobb Vanth is alive. I'm doing a fake smile right now. Like, and it's like, guys.
I want to circle back just briefly to this choice that Baby Yoda sort of makes, but we don't see Baby Yoda make.
Yeah.
Because it's like such a squandered opportunity. This is the thing at the core of Star Wars, which is like attachments to other people. Are they good or are they bad?
Bingo.
And the answer is both. I don't know.
Like, we don't want to make a choice.
And it's so like, it's upsetting, but also it speaks to why eventually Luke's new Jedi school fails. It's upsetting to see him reproduce the logic of the Jedi, which is like, you have to choose between your attachments or being a Jedi. When he was offered the same decision in episode 5, and he chose his attachments and he went and he saved or tried to save his friends. And you could argue that he made a choice that was foolish, but ultimately was the right decision because it helped him to learn about Vader's dad and all this stuff. And the thing that saves Vader in episode 6 is the attachment between father and son.
Bingo.
So there's like this really interesting moral dilemma. But it's being offered by a CG robot, Luke Skywalker, to a fucking toy. And it's not even shown on screen. And you're like, of course the fucking toy decides to go hang out with his buddy. Because everybody in the audience is like, oh, why can't they hang out? They're buddies.
It's a fake choice. It's not a choice because of that.
We need to be challenged as audience members to think about something. And this is not at all challenging. Baby Yoda hangs out with the Mandalorian. That's what they do. They hang out. Yeah. Of course they hang out. We love to see them hang out.
I do love
They're not hanging
them.
Out. Why aren't they hanging out?
Let's make them hang out.
Let's make them hang out. Oh, good. They made them hang out. I feel good.
Serotonin machine working again. Thank you.
It's fucking infantilizing. I don't know. And well, I do think Baby Yoda is adorable. And I was in on the memes when Baby Yoda was a thing. And I did, you know, shed a little, not even a tear, but I was like, oh, when Baby Yoda, you know, made the Rancor fall asleep. That was so cute. Oh, Book of Boba Fett, the show where Baby Yoda puts a Rancor down for its nap. Yeah. I love that show. But still, just because it's working on me emotionally doesn't mean that it's working. It just means that they know how to pull at certain strings.
That's so beautifully said. Just putting the thing in front of me and going, look, don't you like this? And I go, yeah, I do like it. It's like, okay, now say something else. Now do another trick. And they're like, no, we don't have anything else. That's what we had. It was, look, it's Ahsoka Tano. Yeah. I'm like, I fucking love her. I'll die for her. And they're like, yeah, here she is. She's played by Rosario Dawson. I'm like, sucks. Fair enough, dude. Fucking sucks. Fair enough. Oh, that's not enough. And I'm sorry. Like, whatever, guys. People listening to this who are like, Alan and Magellan, don't you know that this is how Disney works? Why do you guys keep falling for it? It's because, one, we're very earnest. And two, we like Star Wars. I continue to like Star Wars despite the fact that Disney refuses to let me like Star Wars. They want to keep shoving it in my face that they can do it poorly. And I'm like, no, but I believe you can do better. Do it right. And they're like, no, we suck at it. And I'm like, no, do it right, though. And I keep giving them chances. I will keep giving them chances, damn it. I'm going to watch Mando's. Thank you. I'm going to watch Mando season 3, okay? I'm going to watch it. I'm going to be caught up. I'm stuck on Mickey Mouse's Hellish Wild Ride. I'm paying for my stupid Disney Plus subscription. I can't get out of this.
I'll watch Obi-Wan. I'm.
Yeah,
I'm
of course I'm going to watch Obi-Wan. Don't watch Mando. Don't do that.
If their goal with this show was to get people like me who didn't jump on Mando and are like, okay, Boba Fett, I know Boba Fett, I'll give it a shot. If their goal was to get people like me to watch this and say like, ah, oh, I guess I missed some stuff, Mandalorian, I should go back and watch. They didn't do it. They failed. Sorry.
They didn't succeed. It failed.
It failed. You didn't do what you were trying to do, which was get me to watch The Mandalorian. That was your purpose with making the book.
It's an ad for the other show. Yeah. It's an ad. It's a sponsored ad, which is so corny and shameless that it's a thing that could only exist in the modern Disney era. And to our original question, to our enterprising, you know, concept, should you watch The Book of Boba Fett? You already know the answer to that question.
Right.
I'm sorry to say, but we're invalidating our own premise here with this one. And we talked about this before recording this one because I was like, Magellan, this show, you already know if you want to watch it. I've been saying this. But, I think it's still interesting and important to consider, why things like this happen and why we as consumers of media, are okay with this and why shows like this still do well. Is because it's still, sometimes I do just want to watch them reference the stuff I like, and that's okay.
Yeah.
If you're okay with, reference-heavy Star Wars nonsense, then, you'll love all of modern Star Wars. It's all self-referential.
Yeah, and, I mean, I know we're sort of, roasting the show right now, and I do want to recognize the other side of the coin, which is, it's pretty cool to have a Star Wars show cross over with another Star Wars show. That's a cool idea. Mm-hmm. I honestly would be down to see more of that happen. And I would love to be pulled along for that and to be the person who sees the second show come out and be like, oh my God, it's the character from the first show that I love so much. So in theory, I think it's a really cool thing. And the fact that this exists is great, but the question of should you watch with something like this is the same question people have when they go in for a Marvel movie. It's the question I had when I was going in to see the new Spider-Man movie, which is how much do I need to watch in order to watch this?
Yeah.
What's the barrier up right now? And it's a really hard... It's something where there's not an easy solution, right? Because we don't want every single story to be completely self-contained necessarily, because it's cool when things cross over. It's rewarding for fans and people who talk about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want the fact that these things cross over to be the point. And that's what this felt like to me.
yeah, or crossover is the point. Like, crossover with a storytelling that incorporates, like, what is Mando about versus what is Boba Fett about works when those two things are about something. But right. both of them, especially in their second halves, stopped being about something and became about the references. And we just were, like, became the references. Yeah. So
it's cool when Buffy shows up in Los Angeles and she and Angel have to, figure out their relationship or whatever.
But like, also it's cool to just, it's cool to hit, watch other show, hit play, oh my God, wait, but that's Buffy. Like, that's, I like crossovers. That's the other thing, is like, concept of a crossover is cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like a crossover is cool. But it wouldn't be cool if you were watching Angel season one and randomly there was an episode of Buffy season 7 or whatever in the middle of that season. I'm not watching Buffy. I'm watching Angel. Come on. I'll go watch Buffy if I want to watch Buffy.
Yeah. You want me to go rewatch Mando? I'm not going to. Season 2 drags a lot. It has some cool parts, but it drags a lot.
Yeah.
Ugh. Welcome to the... welcome to Mickey Mouse's wild, hellish ride. There's no getting off. I'm stuck in the MCU. I'm stuck in the Star Wars expanding universe. And I'm having mostly a lot of fun in it, but I also acknowledge that it's a product and I'm the customer. Like, that's part of it.
I would love to see eventually us get to the point with Star Wars TV where we don't have to feel like we're selling it with like a character name that you know or a character image that you're familiar with, right? Mm-hmm. Where we can get past, we did the Boba Fett show, we did an Obi-Wan show, we did whatever, the Count Dooku prequel or whoever's next. We did the Han Solo movie, whatever. Like, let's get past that.
They're doing an Ahsoka show next, which sucks.
Oh, they are doing one?
They're doing an Ahsoka show, yeah.
Ugh, sorry. Maybe it'll be cool. I don't know. Anyway, I would love to see them get past that and then just say, like, hey, this is Star Wars whatever you want to call it. It's set in this time period, in this part of the universe, and it's, like, mostly new characters, and there's going to be a sort of ensemble storytelling approach where you're going to get all these different vignettes and stories over the course of the show. That would be really cool. I would like to watch that a lot. Do the thing where you're telling multiple stories from different angles of the universe. Do two different shows that run and interweave with each other or spin off from that show to tell the stories of the characters that show up in that ensemble show. Whatever. That sounds great. Stop doing this thing where it's like it's the Obi-Wan show and then you watch it and it's like, nah, but you got to make sure you watch all 8 seasons of the Clone Wars or however many seasons there are in order to really understand what's going on. I don't want that.
It feels afraid. It feels like it is afraid to just be its own thing. We just talked about this. 4 episodes of the Book of Boba Fett are just like, hey, isn't Boba Fett interesting? Doesn't he have a lot going on? You're like, yeah, he really does. And then they're like, all right, we ran out of ideas. And it's like, no, you didn't. You didn't even get to the conclusion of your point. You just said one sentence. Get back to that. And they're like, no, it's time for Mando. You guys like that, right?
And I think what people loved about Mandalorian when it first hit the scene is like, who is this guy? Huh?
He's not established. He's not in the Star Wars universe yet. He's a completely new person.
He's talking to Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
And Horatio Sands.
Huh? This is awesome.
Sure. He's got a little baby Yoda with him. Why not?
Yeah.
That's weird. Just do more stuff like that. It'll be fine.
They won't sell as well. That's all this is now.
If it's Star Wars on it, it'll sell fine.
Wow. I can't wait to be in the next marketing meeting. I'm happy to announce I'm joining the marketing team on Disney Plus Star Wars.
Yeah.
I would do it. I would fix it. I can fix him.
I think you've probably, that job is now impossible for you.
Whoops,
to get.
By saying this, say. Yeah.
By this podcast existing. You on record bashing the Book of Boba Fett.
Take every time I've said damn it or crap or why to I love it.
Let me ask you one quick question.
Sure.
Would you recommend people watch the Book of Boba Fett episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7?
Why Ant 7? I guess for the action, like for the resolution.
Because that's where it concludes, yeah.
If you care about Boba Fett, if you already have an investment in seeing what's up with Boba Fett, then yes, definitely. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7.
Yeah. I don't like recommending skipping things, but 5 and 6 are episodes of The Mandalorian, so you can skip them.
They're not the book of Boba Fett.
Watch 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7 and get a complete miniseries about Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be some stuff you don't fully understand, but I think
you'll be fine. You'll be fine. I agree. But if you have no attachment to Boba Fett and you have no attachment to Disney Plus or to the Star Wars Expanded Universe, don't watch this show. Don't even start with it.
Yeah.
Why? Right. What are you doing? That's why I said earlier, to answer our fundamental question here, you already probably know if you should watch this or you already watched it. So that's our sort of negative, but also just like desperately wishing it was better take on the Book of Boba Fett. It's a frustrating, yeah. It's a frustrating 7 episodes. But you got him a baby Yoda. It's kind of cute, right? Like I would probably get a plushie.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
Can you just say into the mic probably like approximately how much you would spend on a plushie just for me? Just into the mic.
Like in the 50 to 60 range, depending on how big it is.
Cha-ching, cha-ching. Oh, my bank account just updated. That's awesome. Wow. Mickey Mouse. Sorry, I just love Mickey as this like evil corporate greed villain of the Disney universe. So that's what we have, folks, for Should You Watch on the Book of Boba Fett. I think that we'll try to... We're talking about what we want to cover next month. Should we tell the folks now?
Yeah, I think so.
So, folks, next month we are talking about the Amazon Prime animated series, The Legend of Vox Machina, which is based on the Critical Role extended universe of actual play, YouTube videos, and podcasts. This is an animated series that's pretty self-contained from what I've heard. I'm not familiar with Critical Role. Magellan is a bigger fan of tabletop than I am, but we are both very excited for this. So check out The Legend of Vox Machina. We'll come back to talk about it next month.
Yeah.
And I want to shout out a couple of other things going on in the chat's extended universe right now.
Sure. Yeah, do it.
We are still working our way through Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1. If you kept up with us on Patreon, every mm-hmm. December we pilot up a Star Trek show and decide which one to watch. And so far we've landed on TNG and eventually we're going to watch DS9. So we've given ourselves 3 months starting in January to watch TNG Season 1. And yeah. We're going to be talking
You'll hear our coverage of Season 1 of TNG at the beginning of April, the first weekend of April.
Yes, which is pretty cool. We've never watched it before, so we're first-time Trekkies. Yeah. We are nearly wrapped up with Twin Peaks The Return at this point on the main feed, which has been a really exciting time with our friend Ryan. And we will be announcing our next season in the nearish future. And, of course, if you like what you've heard here tonight, you can support us on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/chatspod. Where at just a few dollars a month, you can get all sorts of bonus content. Magellan watches The X-Files over there. Sometimes we do. We watch pilots. We actually watched The Mandalorian pilot, like we mentioned, a little over a year ago with our buddy Six. We have done all sorts of stuff. We've even had an extended conversation way back about The Rise of Skywalker. So
yeah, there's actually a few Star Wars-related episodes on our... we ranked the Star Wars movies at one point, so there's a few Star Wars things on the Patreon.
It's a veritable bounty. And I can also just do our sort of like short version of our plugs here. Chatspod.com, the main place to find all things chats. Chatspod, CHATZPOD on Twitter is a great space to find updates about our podcast. You can subscribe to Chats and give us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And I mentioned the Patreon already. Thank you to Camilla Strader. On all the social media platforms, Camilla, she's our wonderful podcast art creator. She rules. And I'm going out of order here, but we even have a subreddit. It's reddit.com/r/chatspod. I love it very much because our listeners make things for us there. Make content for us. We're sort of the Mickey Mouse and they are the Star Wars in that case. But that's what we got, folks. Magellan, anything else you want to mention here?
No, that's it. Thanks, folks, for listening.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.